Welcome to my first ever talk on Chiron through the signs. This is part of the Eye of the Centaur, the 2023 spring reading from Planet Waves. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino, happy to be here with you, and I'm happy to be embarking on this new kind of video presentation. Video, not my favorite modality to work in, but I'm learning, I do it. And again, our topic is Chiron through the signs. Now, this is likely to take at least three videos. I'm going to introduce the topic today, give some of the basics of generally what Chiron through the signs is about, and I have notes prepared out to Gemini, and then we will see where I am at to give the next one a go tomorrow. And I'm recording, by the way, on Wednesday, the 21st of February, 2024. Now, unlike most of my other talks, I'm going to work with notes. I don't usually work with notes. I reckon that once I've got a start on things, I will just be going. But there are certain points I need to make for each of these, and a couple of essential starting points. And let's begin with the idea that you have a house placement and a sign placement of Chiron. Your sign placement is based on what year you were born, and sometimes down to what month of what year. Your reading contains this list, which is a fairly accurate, approximate. It's accurate as far as it goes, but there are approximations. And if you're born near one of the transition times of Chiron changing signs, you should look, cast your chart, and just find out what sign and house your Chiron's in. And this can be easily done by either going to astro.com, or if you're a subscriber or one of my clients, write to me, and I will tell you. So astro.com to cast your chart. So the house and sign thing works a little like this, and I'm going to be using Babe Ruth, George Herman Ruth, one of my favorite historical figures of all time, as an example. The babe is born with Cancer rising. So that means that we begin the chart counting from the sign Cancer. He happens to have a Chiron in the fourth house in Libra. But had he been born a few hours later, maybe about 6 hours later, he'd have Libra rising and Chiron in the first house. It would still be in Libra. So you have a house placement and a sign placement. There are some overlapping themes between house and sign placement. For example, the third house will have a resonance with Gemini, but it's not exactly Gemini. I think Debbie Kempton Smith put it the best in Secrets from a Stargazer's Notebook, a very entertaining book, better than almost any website, when she said that that the sign placement is the kind of the energy field that's resonating with the planet, and the house placement is where you express that quality. So you're going to get part of the picture from me, which is going to be the sign placement, and that tells you quite a bit. In fact, it tells you plenty, and it's a very good start. And you may have insights about it, and you may have questions about it. Obviously, you'll have questions. Now, this is going to be a kind of a bit of a cursory overview. By cursory, I don't mean that it's not going to be helpful and productive, but what I mean is that the study of Chiron requires some in-depth work. And fortunately, there's a couple of really good books that will help you do that. And you know an astrologer in the form of me who will be able to answer your questions. I seem to be kind of the last of the generation of Chiron pioneers that I learned from. I'm kind of the third generation of Chiron scholars, but the second generation is mostly retired or not that accessible. So I'm accessible. I had very good training and a lot of practice. to build on the training that I had. And as I mentioned in one of the first videos, maybe the preview video, I was having a hard time reading charts and putting the whole story together until I encountered Chiron. So it provided a kind of a hinge pin. Suddenly the door could open and not fall off the hinges. And halfway through Barbara Hand Clough's book, I was able to read charts. And it wasn't because of everything I learned from the book. It was about something that she pointed out that I could tune into, and then I could do it. So let's talk about Chiron through the signs. So first of all, Chiron in any sign creates a focus or emphasis on that sign that may be as intensive as your sun sign, your moon sign, or your rising sign. It's kind of an extra sign that you have where there is going to be a very high degree of concentration of energy and potentially a concentration of power and ability. And this power and ability usually comes from some kind of a persistent crisis that crisis or critical matter that emerges over and over again in life. And so if you're doing the work of Chiron, you're building on Chiron and you're slowly kind of climbing your way up, through dimensions of awareness and really Chiron is about depth actually more than anything. So it allows, kind of guides you inward. One way to think of Chiron is as a kind of very bright light that shines within your horoscope and can be read as this very, very intensive point of awareness. The house is an important mode of expression for the planet, whatever sign it's in. So make sure that you, if you're curious about the subject, make sure that you have some sense of that. I'll be going through the houses in the 12 sign part of the reading where I'm talking about the house where Aries occupies in all the solar charts. And that will give you a sense of Chiron's expression by house. We'll be talking about Aries in all those cases. And we'll begin with Aries in a few minutes. As Chiron through these signs, but the 12 sign readings will give you a clue about the expression of Chiron by house. It kind of completes the sentence. One thing I've noticed about Chiron is that it has a way of turning astrological statements into questions. So you can almost take any sign definition and then stick a question mark on it to represent Chiron, because it is going to invert something about that sign. It's going to also intensify an expression in such a way that may contradict the normal expression of that sign, for example. So in the example of Gemini can have often has a very quick wit, anything associated with Gemini, but put Chiron there and it adds a kind of a doubt about that. It reframes the mercurial quick-wittedness of Chiron as something that is first of all slowed down. That's very important, that Chiron will tend to slow things down for a while till it emerges, and it will, I think, bring up many of the qualities of a sign that are not the usual ones. They're not the ones that are more often talked about. They're more of the ones that represent a kind of a cryptic side of the sign that Chiron will be there to help you decrypt. And I'll do my best to give examples of this as I go through the signs in this video and the next ones. The next is that in addition to the house and the sign, the aspect pattern is very important to study if you want to understand the expression of your Chiron. And that expression is intensified by contact with inner planets. That really is the sun, the moon, Mercury, Venus, and Mars. There are definitely intensified expressions when Chiron is aspecting Jupiter or something like this, or Saturn or Pluto. But to really make Chiron personal, it helps to have the contact with personal planets, with inner planets. And in the alternate, Chiron placed very strongly upon an angle, the ascendant, the descendant, the MC, the IC will also bring Chiron more closely into a personal individual awareness. So people can have more or less Chiron in their chart, which really means more or less of that specific kind of consciousness we're talking about with Chiron, depending upon the placement. And there are sometimes people who understand this kind of consciousness exists and they want it. And so then it's the astrologer's job to kind of weave Chiron into the story of their chart using aspects and using transits and showing the client when Chiron was active and what it felt like. And this often feels like a special intensity at that time in the client's life that cannot really be attributed to anything else. And intensity is one way to describe it, but there's also high focus and kind of a critical moment of choice or decision. As regards the wounding aspect, you'll hear a lot of people describe Chiron as the wounded healer. For me, those are cautionary words that reveal that the person really hasn't been doing any of their own thinking. They just kind of regurgitate that if they haven't really thought it through for themselves. What's actually going on with the wounding property of Chiron is that there is potentially some traumatic event associated with Chiron, a persistent condition that you could somehow attribute to the description of Chiron's placement. And that leads to the need to repair or fix or compensate for or build on or grow that. And then the very unusual properties of Chiron, the very outstanding properties of Chiron can manifest. Okay, so where you have Chiron by house and sign, there's likely to be something that is outstanding about you, but on the other hand, it may be something that you deeply doubt about yourself and are not sure of. And that doubt is part of what feeds the process of building the emphasis that Chiron will have. So it's kind of a standing wave pattern in the chart. And when planets encounter that standing wave pattern, there are interesting results. That includes any planet making a transit to Chiron, including and especially Chiron making transits to its own natal position. And from time to time, I'll make reference to that. One thing about Chiron's position in the solar system is this is an approximate orbit. It's from Melanie Reinhardt's book, To the Edge and Beyond. And what you can see here is that Chiron has this kind of odd-shaped, Chiron is this one right here, this odd-shaped orbit that grazes Uranus. And I have not really sorted this out yet, but it goes through Aries and Pisces longer than Uranus goes through a sign. But it's only said to be a Uranus grazer. This is a technical point. In reality, as currently happening, Chiron moves more slowly than Uranus. And so it's fully in outer planet mode. And then when it gets here, and I'm pretty sure that these two intersection points are in Gemini and Sagittarius, but I will have that sorted out. Chiron crosses into the orbit of Saturn and is said to behave more like an inner planet. Now, because of this loop going way out to the orbit of Uranus, we get a strange effect, which is out at this end, Chiron takes about 9 years to go through a sign. That would be Aries at the longest, and it takes 18 months to go through a sign. That would be Libra, the shortest. And so this is two very different Chirons in one sense, but what I have found is that really it's better to not generalize, and it's better to study your Chiron transits. I don't have an efficient way to figure those out for a lot of people. If I had a really competent astrology assistant, I could do that, and I could train someone. It would take a couple of months to train someone how to do this, but I could turn out a lot of kind of Chiron transit schedules for people efficiently, and it's not the kind of thing that a computer can do, because you have to look at the chart and see what's going on and understand it in a way that an algorithm is just not going to comprehend. This is outside the realm of what's possible for any form of artificial intelligence. Now, another diagram that explains the orbit of Chiron, this is from Barber's book, is that you can see here that when Chiron is close to the sun, it goes through these signs very, very quickly. This is not drawn exactly to scale, but it's not bad. I think that Sag and Cap are a little bit more, well, I would need to look more carefully, but this Cap is about 4 years. Taurus is about six, seven years. And then Aries about nine, Pisces about eight, and Aquarius about 7 years in each sign. Now, there's a few planets that that do this. It's a function of the perihelion effect, where Chiron being a comet in a cometary orbit, medium period cometary orbit, swoops in close to the sun, and you get this effect. So most people in the world have Chiron either in Aries and Taurus, or Pisces, Aquarius and Capricorn. This is the vast majority of people have Chiron in five signs, and then the other seven account for everyone else. One last bit as a point of introduction. One of the distinguishing factors of Chiron as inner versus outer is when you have certain key life transits. And so if you're born with Chiron fast, like for example, moving through Cancer, you will have your first Chiron square at age 7. If you're born like I am, with Chiron in Pisces, you'll have your first Chiron square at around age 22, and it could be as late as age 23. This chart is from Barbara Hand Clow's book. I don't think it's exactly right. I think that this needs this Aries part needs to come up higher, but the idea is the same, that if you're born with Chiron in Aries, you're going to have your first square at around age 19, and in Taurus younger at age 11. But if we come out here to the slow side again, you're going to have the transits much later. I'm not fully trusting of this diagram, though. I think it probably needs to be redone, but you get the idea that the wide variance of age of transits is part of what defines the Chiron experience. And the thing about Chiron and studying the transits is that it reveals a kind of a hidden cycle in the chart, which varies quite substantially by the age that you were, by the year that you were born, and therefore the age where you start having these transits. Conversely, Saturn moves through the signs like clockwork, Uranus moves through the signs like clockwork. They're practically circular orbits. They're highly dependable orbits, and they will average out to being the same number of days in each sign over a couple of orbits. Whereas with Chiron, it is radically different, to the point where it creates a generational effect. And part of that generational effect is that we tend to have certain very important things in common with our grandparents that we don't have in common with our parents, because typically most people are born when their parents are around age 25-ish on average. But their grandparents are often born at age, they're not born. The grandchild is born when the grandparent is around 50 years old. And so that means that you're much, much more likely to have a common Chiron cycle with your grandparents who will understand the nature of what certain developmental stages mean. And really, to have your first Chiron square goes 90 degrees from your place of birth is very, at age 7, is very different from having it at age 22. You have much more volition and agency at age 22 than you do at age 7. And of course, you're much more vulnerable at age 7 than you are at age 22, much more subject to the choices of the adults around you at age 7. And so it creates very, very different experiences. And these must be looked up basically by hand, because the Chiron transits can be printed out by any transit finder and any astrology program. But there are other transits that are very specific to the time of your birth, including transits to angles and the moon and the sun and other planets like that. One last thing while we're on the subject of introducing. The Chiron aspect pattern is very important to understand. Now we're getting into the level of, I would say, serious amateur astrology. And really the only difference between serious amateur astrology and professional astrology is going to be the number of people that you've worked with. And so the more people you've worked with, the better sense you're likely to have of what Chiron is doing, or any planet. But I want to give you an idea of what I mean by an aspect structure. So here we have Babe Ruth's chart. Absolutely perfect, perfect chart for who Babe Ruth was. And this chart, when was he born? February 6th, so he just passed his birthday. This chart deserves a thorough reading, and maybe with a little bit of baseball astrology mixed in. But here's Chiron. Down in the fourth, Babe has Cancer rising, Moon in Cancer. This describes the sheer popularity, this emotional passion that people had, and his kind of stature as a kind of a cosmic mama. I mean, he had paternal energy, but there's something I think very maternal about Babe Ruth, and we see that in Cancer. But he's got Chiron down here in the fourth, and then all of these lines that I've drawn in, not the lines in the middle, the ones I put in the middle are the weird aspects, quindicile and the sesquiquadrate and the semi-square that are not easy to see with your eyes, but something like a square is easy to see. So, and I can never do this right. This backwards thing, it's like, okay, so Chiron is, for example, the moon is square Chiron. You can see that in this line here. And I'll scan this chart. Chiron's also square Juno. So Chiron is adding its emphasis into the moon and into Juno. I don't know about Babe Ruth's marital life, but it's also talking to Pluto up here. See that orange line connecting that? That's like a 2-3 degree aspect. And it's also talking to these planets up here in the ninth house. And so it looks like the 10th, but really, well, depends on your house theory, but water to water, water ascendant, water up there, that's a ninth house thing going on. And he was kind of a mystic in a way. I mean, he was born in the age of spiritualism in 1895, and the guy could use his bat as a divining rod point where he was going to hit that ball out of the park and probably decide whose windshield it was going to hit in the dead ball era when the balls were complete garbage. So, but you can see that he's got a lot of Chiron. Chiron's making many aspects to different planets. And when someone has that kind of thing, that aspect pattern where Chiron's making a lot of aspects to different planets, they are going to stand out in some way. And he certainly stands out. He was one of the great pitchers of his time. And then he was taken off the pitcher's mound and took up his the role for which he's famous as a slugger. That's incredible. God, I mean, have you ever really studied baseball pitching? It's freaking impossible. I don't know how these guys do it. And then batting, I mean, have you ever stood at the plate? I mean, maybe you played softball. Hard enough, right? Without the ball coming at 90 miles, 100 miles an hour. He could both pitch masterfully and was one of the greatest batters in the history of baseball. That is Chiron operating. And he had it in Libra. And so, you know, Libra is going to emphasize the aesthetic quality of whatever it touches. And so Chiron is going to concentrate a lot of aesthetic Venusian energy in the person's life. All right. So that kind of gets us started on a few different key points. I think that with Chiron, the thing is that we're not talking about typical cookbook astrology, and cookbook astrology can be fantastic. I keep mentioning Secrets from a Stargazer's Notebook by Debbie Kempton Smith. You can probably pick it up for $3 or $5. She worked hard on that book. I knew Debbie. The book is fucking funny. It's so funny you memorize it as you're going. It's so brilliant that the metaphors just stick in your mind. But Chiron really cannot be read like that. The emphasis is very personal. There are things that come up during Chiron transits that people don't want to talk about. And when you're looking at their Chiron transits with them, you can, this is the really important pitfall to point out, you can, or bad metaphor, but you can end up being whipped, ripped out like a riptide into deep water beyond the depth of your ability to help or counsel the person because you have touched on certain points of injury and trauma in their life, and you have to be ready for that. I mean, that's the Chiron transit method of deducing Chiron is quite easy, except for that. And the method that I have used for Chiron has not been so dependent on reading house and sign. I start with the house and sign as a starting point, and then I have made a careful inventory of Chiron transits, and I still do this with my clients and almost every reading, if only taking a few minutes to check on some of the transits. Okay, so let's talk about Chiron in Aries and the idea that Chiron turns the statement of astrology into a question. Aries is a perfect example. The common key phrase, you know, if you open up a piece of bazooka bubblegum and it says Aries, it'll say, I am. But Chiron turns that around into this voracious question of who am I? Many of you watching have Chiron in Aries. Chiron was in Aries it was in Aries part of 1968. That's to say, May through October of 1968. And then the following January, it goes into Aries and then it remains there till the transition years of 76 and 77. So if you're born in 76 and 77, Chiron's moving in and out of it between Aries and Taurus. Cast your chart, find out exactly where this is. So this covers, I think, especially by age, older people tend to gravitate toward my astrology, quite a few of you. So it turns the question, the statement I am, into the question, who am I? But with an intensity that is kind of classically chirotic, which can push it to a life or death scenario. The problem is most people don't know they have this, and they don't know what's different from people between them and people of other ages. It's going to express itself a little bit differently in everyone's life and in everyone's chart. So it's not exactly like you're in a position to be able to compare notes with someone and say, well, I'm having this exact same kind of experience, because it's not going to be that same kind of voracious quest for identity that is so deeply encrypted in Chiron in Aries. Well, these people are going to be provocative and intense people. There is no getting around that. They're going to have an effect when people walk into the room, but you may be in conflict with that energy. And of course, the aspect pattern, the actual means of expression of Chiron, how it reverberates around the chart, what it's talking to and not talking to, are going to describe whether you're aware of that effect or not aware of that effect. But it can have a catalyzing effect on others. I would think this would be a very effective position for some kind of a therapist or an astrologer, because it's going to orient your life around a quest for who you are. And we have Chiron decidedly operating as an outer planet in Aries, and this can stand as this sensation of something missing that must be searched for outside oneself, when really the only way to find that thing with Chiron and Aries is representing is to look within oneself and to seek a deep sense of personal understanding. And this can take a long time. And the stages of that personal understanding are going to come through the Chiron transit. Now, I'm doing a Chiron return reading as the final in this part, final reading in this part. But let me give you an example of serennu.com. Nope, Chiron Midnight Ephemeris at Serenu, Tracy Delaney's wonderful website. And you can find your Chiron position easier by sign than by house at going to Serenu, serennu.com. So for example, if you were born in, let's say you're born in between 1968 and 1976 with Chiron and Aries, you will have your Chiron first square later in life. Chiron first squares for Chiron in Aries begin in 1988 and they stretch through 1991. So somewhere in that 3-year span, if you have Chiron in Aries, you had your Chiron first square between late 88 and then early 91. And then in the 9/11 era, you had your Chiron opposition. That would be sometime between 2002 and very early 2005. That's a tight window. Everybody went through a crisis at 9/11, but yours was compounded by your Chiron opposition. And I'm not going to calculate the ages here. I can't do that on the fly. I apologize. 02 to 05 was your second square. Your opposition, if you have Chiron in Aries, occurred in a very narrow band of time between late 95 sometime in 96 and then mid 97. So in that less than 3 year span, you had your Chiron opposition. Then 02 to 05, you had your Chiron square, and then a second square, and then IE reached the second 90 degree point. And now, sometime between 2018 and around 2025, 26, and a little bit of 27. So out to early 27, 3 more years, you're having your Chiron return. And so in my thinking, understanding these crux points, crisis points or turning points, says more about Chiron's natal placement than the natal placement does. But that really is a matter of technique, and it's a matter of me not wanting to speculate about what the placement is about for an individual person. So just talking in generalities. Now, there is a really important issue of identity with Chiron and Aries. Pretty much identity politics, as we think of it, was born under the influence of Chiron in Aries. And so it starts, you know, as the Vietnam War protests start to wind down in really late 1970, and even well before that, there was a kind of a fragmenting of the political movement, which had been a quite tightly unified civil rights movement into a quite tightly unified anti-Vietnam War movement. But by the late 60s, that's starting to fragment. And we get things like an environmental movement, a student movement, a women's lib movement, a spiritual movement called the New Age, and a diversity of other things where the possibility to say, ah, that's what I am. I'm part of that group. Was more prevalent. Now, what is interesting there is that means there is a tribalizing to me anyway, and we're seeing it. We are seeing it in the current transit of Chiron in Aries to a degree that kind of thought I would never do it. Make me want to hit my head against the wall. It's so freaking frustrating. Of this obsessive woke identity politics that is tribalizing. And so there's a reversal when Chiron's in Aries, and that is, and we're going to see this in other signs also, that on the cultural level, the reversal is not so much a quest for individuality, but a quest for tribalization. Now, here's the difference between when people were born with Chiron and Aries in the late 60s into the early 70s into the mid 70s is that we were not living in the digital age. And so in fact there was quite a bit of self-actualization work going on. You could belong to encounter groups. Betty Dodson is getting going with her consciousness raising groups. There are still groups though, right? They're still little tribes, but there were more good therapists operating in those times. There were fantastic therapy trainers. Fritz Perls was still in business training therapists, and the, far as I'm concerned, the great masters of informal psychotherapy are pretty much gone, and their students are aging out. They're in their late 70s and 80s for the most part. And so while there was that tribalizing effect of Chiron and Aries in the 60s and 70s, there was also a book like Games People Play could sell millions of copies. And there was a the question of who am I was a more valid question than it is today, where it's all been swallowed by digital consciousness. Now, one thing about Chiron and Aries, people tend to be trailblazers and can have either a profound courageousness, or that's to say courage, or deep insecurity that is almost like a knife edge between the two of them. And you've got to decide if your insecurity is doing anything for you, and evaluate the times in your life where you were courageous, and ask yourself what that did for you. There is also the activation of Mars when Chiron's in Aries, of warrior energy. So you want to look at where your Mars is and study the aspect between Mars and Chiron, with Chiron and Aries. Anytime Chiron's in a sign, you want to look for Chiron's aspect to the ruling planet of that sign, if it makes one, and see what that talks about. The placement of the ruling planet is going to tell you about Chiron in a different way. So you can read by inference as well. Finally, the activation of the warrior quality requires discipline. You can be as assertive and aggressive as you want, but without discipline, you don't have very much. Okay, Chiron and Taurus. So this is the discovery sign for Chiron. And so there is a Chiron chose to manifest in Taurus. Now, interestingly, while we're on the subject, Chiron was first seen in 1895, the year of Babe Ruth's birth, and it was seen at perihelion. It was seen when it was the closest to the sun. That makes sense. It was found in a what's called a pre-discovery photo, and what I have not mentioned now, I'm somewhere in which, how many videos? I guess this is really the second official one, plus the warm-up pitches for the little ads. Is that Chiron involves the hands. The word Chiron in Greek stands for one who has hands, and therefore there's something special about hands, and there's something special about the medical arts that require the hands. And one of them is called chiropractic. And I find it, if I were standing at a conference giving a lecture, I'd be jumping up and down saying this, that in the year of the first pre-discovery photo of Chiron, which was in a Venus ruled sign, by the way, as the final discovery photo, chiropractic medicine is invented by D.D. Palmer. Chiropractic medicine is invented the year of Chiron's first pre-discovery sighting. And Chiron is all about healing with the hands. Your chiropractor better have a good Chiron placement, or understand chiral energy. There are the real chiropractors, and there are the fake chiropractors who wanted an easy path to go to medical school and work with a million clients a day. And I think that chiropractic and all healing arts with the hands can be trained, but what you're training is a pre-existing talent. And so lacking that talent, you kind of get some technique, but you don't get the real thing. So Chiron in Taurus brings a special emphasis to the body. There is a very high expression of Venusian energy, a special kind of desire that's different from the desire of Mars. It's more of a come hither kind of desire. And there's going to be a powerful energy current running through these individuals' bodies. And so Chiron is experienced as a physical thing more than anything, and not only a physical thing, but a property of their own body that they think everyone else is going to have. And if I had to spin the wheel on Chiron and choose a lover, first choice would be Chiron in Taurus, and second choice would be Chiron in Pisces. And Chiron responds very well to Venusian energy and will energize the body in Taurus. And this makes a very high concentration of sexual energy. And Chiron and Taurus people are check around, openly sexually curious, even horny people. And I don't know, I hate that word, but I prefer sexually curious, but it's different from horny, and have interesting fetishes. So if you have Chiron and Taurus, don't worry about, nobody should worry about their fetishes. Really, they're there to explore. But if you have one of these Chiron and Taurus things where it's like so intense, you think this is kind of over the top, explore. The only fetishes that I am decidedly against as a sex educator are choking and cutting. I think that those are expressions of something that that needs another conversation outside of the play space and in the therapy space. So Chiron in Taurus is going to really push the need to integrate spirit with body. And Chiron is a nexus point of spirit and body in many different expressions, but especially in Taurus, where there's a, it's almost like a lightning rod, grounding people, grounding high energy into the physical form. So physical, that's physical integration. We've covered that. We have covered the extreme sexually aware piece. And by the way, in my notes here, I've got keep your energy moving. With this placement, it is especially dangerous to suppress sexual feelings, desires, and needs. Society loves to do this. There is a real problem right now with people demanding consent, and then if you have the consent conversation, that too is offensive. We are in a million double binds around sexuality, and you need to find sexual allies, not just friends, not just lovers, but people who really are in your life and support your quest to discover yourself. And you know, good luck with that in 2024. But it is genuinely a healing need that you have, and your physical integration with the body is going to have a lot to do with how you move your orgone, chi, kundalini energy, whichever it, whatever metaphor that you prefer, and those orgasms are very, very important points of physical and spiritual integrations. It's almost as if Chiron in Taurus is a naturally tantric placement, because it exalts the sexual nature of the body as a spiritual expression, spiritual phenomenon. Check your house placement. That is very important, because it will tell you where the expression is. And also, apropos of the physical nature of Chiron and Taurus, where you ground Chiron is a kind of like a receiving station. And so with this placement, it is very important that you be energetically receptive, and that you allow your senses to be receptive, and that you allow your senses to inform you of what is going on. And with Taurus, especially, very nervous people, generally the Taurus sun, but that may carry over into some other properties of Taurus. But with Taurus, the expression of Fritz Perls, I believe himself a Taurus, is lose your mind and come to your senses. And that really means feel what you're feeling and experience what your body is experiencing, without having to evaluate or cogitate it. And this leads to the last important scenario of Chiron in Taurus, which can be an over-exaggerated sense of morality and principles that contradicts the very nature of the need for physical experience, particularly sexual experience, that you have. So you need something's got to give. And if you consider yourself to be a very moral and principled person, you might want to ask yourself why you are that way. Capricorn is the ninth place from Taurus. So to put Capricorn in the ninth in any context is to have an exaggeration of traditional morality that can be extremely annoying. And it's, you know, it's all a bunch of fucking bullshit religion. The entire business of religion is making people feel bad about themselves and their experience on the physical plane. And then you go to them and you give them your love and your money and you pray for absolution, blah, blah, blah. With Taurus and Chiron and Taurus, and look, Taurus generally, your body is the temple and the vehicle of your enlightenment. And that includes everything that you feel, especially the pleasant feelings of desire that that are so easy to dismiss in the pseudo morality of our times. Okay, third one for today, Chiron in Gemini. Chiron was, let's go back through very briefly. Chiron was in Taurus 76-77 were the transition years. 78-9, 80-81, 82 Chiron solidly in Taurus. 83-84 transition years. And then we get into Chiron in Gemini, part of 84, 85, 86, 87 and part of 88. So you can see now that Chiron is spending less time in each sign as we go through through the signs. So Gemini, sign of the twins, the sign of dualism, all the signs are dualistic in some way, except for maybe Leo. But, you know, because you have Aries, you've got the horns of the dilemma, and with Taurus, the bull has horns too. And then when we get to the first sign in the zodiac, where there's people, one of my favorite cosmic jokes in all of astrology is there's not one, but two. And they're twins, but if you look at the sixth card in the tarot, sometimes they're called the brothers, and sometimes they're called the lovers. And so, who are these twins? Well, the Chiron in Gemini is going to exaggerate the experience of dualism, the experience of the twins. And so there may be this very pronounced sense of, am I that or am I that? Am I this one or am I that one? And I think the clear need with Chiron in Gemini is brain hemisphere integration, to use your whole brain, to get the whole thing into the act, to know what that means, to not be resistant to the mystical experiences of the right hemisphere, and to not be resistant of the logic seeking and language making facility of the left hemisphere, but to get your whole brain talking to itself. Those are what those twins are. And you know, there's other interpretations, Castor and Pollux, one's the immortal twin, one's the mortal twin. Which one is which? And so all of these things can be up for discussion with Chiron in Gemini. These tend to be very telepathic people, tuned into the consciousness of others around them. So there's a kind of a telepathic quality that Chiron and Gemini can have. They're able to read the community, read the collective state of mind, particularly people close in. Chiron's acting as an inner planet at this point, and Gemini represents things that are close to home. Experiences in early childhood are going to be very important with this placement. That is to say, look for events around toddlerhood, like 2.5 to 5 years old. I'm not sure you're still a toddler at age five, but around that time, maybe younger, as Melanie Reinhardt says, Gemini and third house are about what you bumped into crawling around on the floor. So think about the times when you were crawling around on the floor and what you bumped into. Additionally, there is the matter of relationships to siblings, and these can be fraught with Chiron in Gemini. Now, this can happen. A lot of things can create this, and the first siblings of the Bible were killing each other. That tells you a little bit about our culture's kind of understanding and expression of siblinghood. But check relationships with siblings. Now, there's another interesting property, and this is discussed in this most astounding book. And you can even start with this book. I mean, Barbara's is easy. It's an easy in, but it's on a whole other level. It's kind of Melanie is next level with this. So depending on how much you know, I think it's very important to have Barbara's book. But in any event, in To the Edge and Beyond, I pretend that that's not the title, by the way. I'm in denial of the title of this book because I'm so in love with Melanie's phrasing, To the Edge and Beyond. One of the participants in the workshop talks about how there's a known phenomenon of many of us having been part of two fertilized zygotes, two fetuses forming in the womb, and one of them at a certain point is absorbed back into the placenta. So there can be a sense of the missing other under the influence of Chiron in Gemini, the missing other. So note that, and I think in our lives and with all things Gemini, the search for the missing other is such an important part of our spiritual journey. And I think it would be a good topic for an essay with Chiron in Gemini, my search for the missing other. And studying the ways that your sibling relationships have influenced your business partnerships and your connubial, marital lover partner partnerships. One of my favorite things about Chiron in Gemini, and this works in the third house also, is that they often feel far, far less intelligent than they actually are. There's a savant quality, I've tested this in many charts, and it almost always seems to be true that people with Chiron in Gemini in the third might be the ones who are seem to be slow learners, or they're not able to keep up with the pace of the class in school, and that may lead you to think that you're not that smart. Maybe. But in reality, you are very much dancing to the beat of your own drummer. Mentally, you have your own way of acquiring knowledge and information. You have your own way of synthesizing reality and truth from the facts that you have. And there is a kind of a savant quality to Chiron in Gemini in the third house. And so I would say that one thing you can do, kind of a counseling pro tip with Chiron in the third house, is consider the places you think you are deficient or lacking with Chiron in your life, in your intellect, your intelligence. Forget Chiron. You may think, wow, I can't play chess, or wow, I'm terrible at formal logic, or I'm dyslexic, or I have trouble understanding philosophical concepts, or I was never able to do mathematics. And give yourself a chance to learn that again. Find someone who is willing to help you, or in some way express your fascination for it. This, I think, is a very healthy thing. I personally never learned how to work out physics equations on any. I must have done some in the one semester of physics that I took in high school, but I have probably watched 100 physics lectures, and most of them I've watched 3 times. And so, I at least feel like, even though I feel like I've got a kind of a debility where I haven't learned how to work out physics equations, I at least immerse myself and indulge my curiosity about the subject and my fascination about the subject, and never fail to interview an engineer when I when I find one, or to ask someone who built something, how did you build this? Tell me the story. So, the other thing with that kind of savant quality is that the very fact of feeling the deficiency in that thing may have already provoked you into doing it brilliantly and doing it well, and certainly with all things Chiron, doing it in your own way. All right. So there we go. My first foray into Chiron through the houses. How was that? Please leave a comment somewhere and let me know. And questions are welcome. I'm not sure when exactly I'm going to continue. I'm trying to do one or two videos a day to take pressure off of next week, and I'm going to go through the 12 signs with the eclipse chart. That is this astounding chart, the greatest of all Chiron and Aries charts. One thing I didn't let's end on this note. This little red thingy here is Eris. And Eris has been in Aries since 1922. It took a few years to transition in, 130 plus year stay of Eris in Aries. But what that has meant is that there's been one Chiron to Eris conjunction, and that was in around 1970, 71. If the women's lib movement has a shred of integrity, that's what it is. There was some need in the collective psyche at that point, I think, for women to contact their masculine side. I would not, therefore, I think women's lib may be one thing. Masculism would be the better word. And that conjunction of Chiron to Eris also was the explosion of identity politics. Now we're seeing something similar, and there is going to be, let's find this again. As you can see, Chiron is getting very close to Eris. Chiron moves not that fast, but it moves a lot more quickly than Eris. I guess you can see what I'm doing here in the high-tech graphics department. Saves a lot of editing. And in the chart for the eclipse that's coming, Mercury is conjunct Eris, and Mercury is retrograde. You can't see it, but that little RX is right down there. I'll put a circle around it. That little RX is right down there. And so, this, I think, is one of the most important charts representing whole seeking, the healing of the fragmentation and the disembodiment that we are experiencing. And though I haven't talked it up very much in the past hour, the placement of Chiron through these signs, each is going to have its own particular style of healing the crisis of disembodiment that we are living through. With Chiron in Aries, it is going to be about absolutely being yourself. Damn the torpedoes and the incoming and the judgments. And with Chiron and Taurus, it's going to be the practice of physical integration that goes beyond Hatha yoga. Hatha yoga is an almost asexual practice, and it is not necessarily encouraging of Kundalini development or of sexual development, and that sexual development piece must be present with Chiron in Taurus. And finally, the embodiment of Chiron in Gemini is, I think, going to be maintaining a highly aware mental state in all interactions with the internet, and being aware of this zeros and ones property that we are in. And the main quality of the astral plane, and the internet is a low astral plane, it's a weird astral plane with date stamps and time stamps and GPS coordinates and blockchains and all of this stuff. But the thing that the entire digital environment has in common is zeros and ones. Hard as it is to believe that I'm coming to you in a presentation of countless billions of zeros and ones. It's kind of fucking crazy. But Chiron in Gemini is going to be about being highly aware of the polarized nature of our times and working that personal integration quality to heal that split, that division, that hemispheric split. All right. Thank you for your business, your trust, for subscribing. Please subscribe to Planet Waves. It helps me do this between all the big readings like this one. Lots of love, and bye for now.